Good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on April 25th. That's April 25th, 2024. Bright sunny day here in Maine, though a bit chilly even for April for us. It was about 23 degrees when we got up this morning, so I hope it was a little warmer where you are. It's going to warm up to about 56 today. We got one of my favorite people in the whole world of education with us today, Phyllis Wolfram. Phyllis is the executive director of the Council of Administrators of Special Education, CACE, which is part of CEC, Council for Exceptional Children. They just had their Academy of Law and Leadership for Special Education Administration. And it ended on April 18th. Today's the 25th, so 7 days ago. So this is really pretty new information, and there's some real heavy-duty stuff going on in special education, hot topics that are affecting everybody across the nation, kids at schools, principals, teachers. I'll give you an example of Phyllis Dozen from Braintree in Massachusetts. That was the front page of the Boston Globe yesterday as we talk some more today. But Phyllis is going to be with us. We're going to talk about this. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org. That's the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's over there. You will find all sorts of information. Our magazine, Equity in Access, all the podcasts are over there. All kinds of new information, and of course, our Equity Awards program. So please check it out over at ace-ed.org. I want to remind you, everything's free over there. No tricks. Go over, check it out. You don't have to sign in or anything nuts like that. Just go over, check it out. We're really trying to make sure that every kid gets the education they deserve. And on that note, somebody else is trying to do this, and that's my guest today, Phyllis Wolfram. Good morning, Phyllis. How are you? It's Larry.
Good morning. Good morning. I am doing great. It is 52 degrees to start the
already?
Day here in South Missouri already. So we're going to have a little bit of a warmer day. Got a little rain last night, so I'm looking forward to having some wet ground because I'm going to plant my garden
there you
coming
go.
Week. So excited about that.
My wife just went to Costco and bought some plants first time this year. So we're getting ready here, just like you are over there. And today's a big day, Phil, because today I had my cataract surgery earlier this week, so I'm actually doing this show without my computer glasses on. What do you think of that? There you go. First time in about 12 years. Yeah.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's
going to
be pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see if it's supposed to get better and better and better over the next few weeks, so we're going to see what happens. But no glasses today, so that's why I'm going to call you Wolfram. That would not be good. You're Phyllis Wolfram.
Well, I tell you what, now I'm going to have to Zoom with you so that I can see your eyes without your glasses.
There you go. Mm-hmm. For years. So here you go. It's great, but this is really weird. I just realized it today, so it's pretty cool. Hot legal topics in special education. Do you know about this thing that's going on in Braintree? Front page of the Globe yesterday in Boston?
No, but
you know,
tell me.
Oh, well, everybody will love this one. I mean, this is just going to be right across the country everywhere. An autistic child in elementary school. The school district was always paying, okay, for her to go to a special school because they were not able to accommodate her at the typical public school. But unfortunately, I guess with budget cutbacks and everything else, they had to stop that and bring the child back into the classrooms at the standard public school, okay? But the kid then did not go to school for a year. And a judge stepped in. Yeah, the judge stepped in, okay, and said, no, the child must go to school, all right? And so the mother drops the kid off at school. This is a few weeks ago. Mother drops the child off at school, and the child has an absolutely horrible day. Obviously, she could not work in this kind of environment, being autistic and all that. She couldn't handle it, et cetera, et cetera. So she came home, kept telling her. She called her mother like 12 times during the day. I can't take this, all this sort of stuff. All right. The mom didn't know what to do because the judge has ordered the child back to school. So they tried again the next day, and the kid would not leave the parking lot. The mom had to go to work. The principal came out, tried to talk the child to come into the school. Okay. The kid wouldn't do it. And now what? So the police had to come. okay, and try to handle all this. And the windup of it was the police in Braintree got involved, the school districts involved, the moms obviously trying to do the right thing for a child, but the mom doesn't know what to do because she's under court order to put the kid back at school, and the school can't handle it. Now what? Okay? Now what? Thank you, Phyllis. Go ahead. Council of Administrators of Special Education, KCEC.org. Okay? Yeah, here we
you
go.
You know what,
this is, yeah.
Those questions were the hot topics, such unique situations where we're dealing probably in this situation, again, you know, appropriations and shortage of funds could be a possible reason. It could be that they actually hired a teacher that could provide those services now, and so the least restrictive environment could be back in the school. So many variables that we don't understand
There really are. Yeah, and they're short. The school district's short of dollars, okay? You know, it's like everybody, they have budget problems in Braintree, like everybody else. Nobody's picking on Braintree. They're trying to, they can. I don't even know if the school, I don't remember this from the article. I don't even know if the school has special education teachers available for anyone on campus.
Yeah,
okay. Tough problem.
The shortage of certified, experienced special education teachers and staff, even instructional support personnel, occupational therapists, physical therapists, board certified behavioral analysts. It's a critical shortage across the nation. And what we've seen throughout our conference is the questions, the presentations, a number of them are a result of lack of appropriations, lack of certified educators, behavior of students. It is a culmination of things that educators are having to deal with right now. And, you know, one of the key issues that came out of our meeting that we heard over and over again was communication with parents, problem solving with the parents.
Interesting.
Being the key component to determining how to provide FAPE to a number of kids. So when I go back to your Boston situation, you know, the mom is probably struggling as well, having to go to work. It's no fun when you feel that stress about, I have to be at work, I can't miss work, and I have to take care of my child. The stress of that is real, and we know that with our parents. So at some point, everyone's going to have to sit down, have a very serious conversation. And the elementary student, I mean, something needs to happen from a behavioral health situation and calling in some experts in that field to really understand where the kiddo is coming from and how can we get through to get them in school. If everyone has determined, and it seems like there's been some legal involvement there with a judge, and again, a number of issues around that and variables that we might not know what some of those discussions are. But first and foremost, it's understanding where that kiddo is at and how can we meet their needs to transition them back into that setting that is probably very difficult after being in a different setting for a long time for elementary kiddos, even for middle school and high school kiddos.
Oh, anybody. Especially, you know, and everybody's trying here. Nobody's at fault. Okay, the way I read the story, no one's at fault. I mean, the school district obviously would love to help the kid. Okay, the mom obviously is an advocate and needs help. Okay, the judge is stuck trying to make sure the child gets to school. Okay, and it's just everybody's trying to help, and there's no easy answer. And in this day and age, it's almost, you know, between a rock and a hard place, no matter what you try to do. All right, it's just brutal. You know, and let's go into that. Your Case Academy of Law and Leadership ended a week ago. Where was it?
We were in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we had some great hosts. We had a law firm, Ratwick, was our host law firm. There are three names. I should know that by heart now. And I'm going to find that before we hang up here, because these attorneys were just wonderful. Rathwick, Rozak, and Maloney. And they assisted us with presentations along with a number of other attorneys from across the nation. Our great friend, Julie Weatherly, was with us.
Right, of course.
Christian Schaefer and Laura Booth from the Rathwick, Rozak and Maloney law firm. We had another one of our panelists was Betsy Helfrich from Missouri, and they just gave us their best advice. You know, they are working with school districts across the nation, actually having to work with school personnel to solve problems just like the one that you posed. You know, and a number of their, you know, responses when we asked questions and answered, or when questions were asked and we answered questions was, you know, they kind of joke, it says, well, it depends, you know.
That'll be $700. It depends. That'll be $700. Thank you very much. No, just kidding.
Exactly.
Of course, right.
It depends. Like we're discussing with this particular case, there are so many specific variables.
Yeah.
But the one thing that we need educators to do when they are in a pickle, when they are in a tough situation, and we are talking about legalities and responsibilities of school districts, is to seek that counsel, to seek that advice. Because I will tell you that a number of our questions, everything that that we talked about over those 3 days really kind of boils down to, are we following the law? Are we being compliant with all the regulatory requirements? And as you know, those regulatory requirements are in the hundreds and hundreds. And in some states where additional state compliance is imposed, there's maybe 1,000 cross your T's and dot your I's educators have to be familiar with. So it's not an easy fix in any situation. But again, one of the prevailing overall responses to solving these problems or looking at those solutions, we're sitting down and communicating effectively with the families and the students that are involved. And if we build those relationships and if we communicate effectively and we talk about, here's the compliance requirements that we have to adhere to, how do we then work through the process of providing that free and appropriate public education to each of those students? So I kind of can sum that up to say we had a great experience. We are planning to do this again next year. We believe that we're offering it at a very affordable rate. One of the key pieces of our academy, the majority of every one of our presentations had an attorney and a local special ed administrator. So, for example, they said, here's the topic. Here's the challenge, or here's one of the big compliance requirements that we're dealing with in our district. And so the attorney talks about the legal requirements, maybe the court cases that would impact decision making. And then the local director was talking about, here's how I handle it in my school district. Here's an example of how you might resolve this or address this or implement this particular aspect of special education in your school district. So we kind of took that research to practice approach so that you can make better decisions in your school district for implementing IDEA. So we think we were pretty successful in doing that. We got great
I'm
responses.
Sure you were. I'm sure you were. And you know, what did the attorney say? And I was thinking about the Braintree thing, the one I was just mentioned. Braintree, by the way, is a south suburb, an immediate south, and, you know, and in close to the city suburb of Boston on the south side, on the south shore of Boston. And, you know, what did they do when there's a situation All right. And I know legally the school district has to provide that child's education. Right now they may be having trouble finding a person to do it, okay, or affording it or whatever the case may be. Okay, there's no easy answer, okay? How do they communicate that to the parent? And how do they handle that? What did the lawyer say? That frustration, I'm asking that, that's a specific case, but that frustration is probably in all 50 states right now. How in heck do we handle something that there's just no answer to? Okay, what do we do? Okay, and Phil, I can't, that frustration, okay?
Right.
You must have heard that frustration from every school district in the country who was visiting the academy. It's just
absolutely
untenable. Mm-hmm. It's a ridiculous situation.
You know, right, and I think that what comes into play there, many times the special ed director sometimes feels like the lone ranger in making those decisions. So the first step is involve that your superintendent and your other district level administrators to say, hey, I have a real issue here that we need to work together to problem solve from it. And if it is a financial situation, because you and I both know, Larry, that financial is not a consideration when implementing IDEA.
Right.
I mean, granted, right, we are not funded from a federal perspective where we need to be funded or where we're even promised initially. But, you know, we have to look at what resources can we pull and what can we provide. I think then the next step is, and I know that educators have a full resource and toolkit. And the thing is, we may need to look at outside resources when we have such difficult situations. And many times we're asking educators to be those mental health experts, and we're not. You know, we're educators.
Yeah.
We have not been trained. The majority have not been trained in understanding health disorders. Not every educator has the expertise to deal with children with autism. So it's also bringing in those experts and really thinking outside the box about what other things can we try. And we do know, we do have a list of things that we can try. I really am disappointed when we say, well, we've tried everything. Well, you haven't, there's no one that's ever tried everything, right? And so I think it's even bringing in some people with a fresh perspective, sometimes mediators helping work through that, or experts in the field of autism, experts in the field of behavior and mental health, coming in to help school districts and parents look at other ideas. I think if I felt I was at the end of the road, that's what I would do. I would bring in some different perspectives to help do some problem solving. And I also think that where the parent is feeling some pressure from a judge, the school district might be able to talk with the district attorney, talk with someone, you know, from the judge's office to say, we need some assistance here. We don't want to penalize the parent. We want to help the parent. We want to help the student. And we're struggling.
Exactly.
And we're struggling. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So, yeah, it's so difficult. You know, it's hard when there's no answer. What are the other topics that came up? I'm curious. What are the other cases, topics, issues? Okay, what were the big ones? Okay.
There were some. One of the things we did, Larry, throughout the conference, we created an avenue that the participants could ask questions throughout the conference. So you're sitting in a session and you're hearing something from an attorney, and now you have a question. So we have this long list of questions, and our closing session was 90 minutes of Q&A, having a panel of attorneys answer the questions at hand. And so some of the questions were around retention. What we know is that
you mean teacher retention?
No, retention of special education students. You know, what are the rules around that? Because we have an IEP that says we're making progress. So does the IEP team have the authority to say we want to retain a student? You mean to retain,
I want to get the semantics right. You mean to retain a student in special ed or to put them back into regular classes? Is that what that means?
Retain them from moving forward from grade to grade toward graduation.
Wow.
So retaining, like spending another year in third.
Yep.
And
hold them back. Hold them back a year. Yeah. Now I get it. Retain.
Hold them back.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
The word is too many challenges this year. Okay. Retention.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you look back and you think about, we're still facing some of the fallout from COVID. So school personnel might be struggling with that particular issue. How do we? We know kiddos lost instructional time during that time period. A number of districts and states are still playing a little bit of catch up. Some are caught up, and we saw some scores come out from some studies just recently. And we do know that there are a number of states making some progress, but retention was an issue that came up at one point in time. The other was,
wait a minute, I gotta stop you for a second. Hold on, Phil. Why is if a teacher decides a kid needs to be held back, is that a challenge coming from the parent or would that come from the school district? Who's arguing that?
Sometimes it's a request of the parent, and sometimes it could be the request of the school district. What we're hoping is that what we know about research and retention is that it doesn't really serve our students well. However, now we're having to balance what we know about retention not being favorable and that instructional time being lost. And how do we continue to move kids forward? Bridges to the next question is one of the questions was we are receiving lots of requests for students to leave school to go to private therapies or to go to extra programs that parents may have purchased, maybe for reading or maybe for math.
Sure.
How do we handle that in the school district? One question that we received was, we have a student for who a doctor has prescribed ABA therapy for 20 hours a week, and the parent is asking the school district to excuse the student from school. And
What is ABA?
Applied Behavioral Analysis. So we're talking about some behavior therapy.
Sure.
So, you know, the school has designed an individual education program for the student. They're providing FAPE, and now the parent wants the student to leave school early. Lots and lots of very individualized questions about what to do, given so many different requests that are coming into the field of special education.
So, is this a new thing? This is actually interesting. Is this a new thing that parents are branching out on their own? There's a shortage of special ed teachers, so they're looking for therapists on their own. Is this a new thing post-pandemic?
I never heard of this one before.
Yeah, I never heard of this one before.
It is not new, but I think it is increasing in nature. We're seeing a little bit of that according to the questions and conversations that were held last week. So, yeah, I think an increase in that.
Mm-hmm. The complications are so amazing. Things that I never even think of. And, of course, if you're a special ed parent or a special ed teacher, you think of this all the time. Okay, and you're talking to others and you get the ideas, et cetera, et cetera. But the school district is still bound by law to do something. What is the challenge to a school district? If a parent wants to take their kid out for private therapy for 2 hours a week or 3 hours a week, is that a transportation problem? Are they worried that they're not getting enough of the regular curriculum? Where's the problem right there?
It really goes back to state law. What are attendance requirements for students to be in school? Just like case in Boston, the judge said, you got to send your kid to school. because what we know is that at age 16, students can, in some states, drop out of school. They don't have to go, so there's no mandatory attendance. But the first rule of thumb is to look at what is mandatory attendance in your state, and what does the law require in public education. The second is the student enrolled in private school? So if the student is enrolled in a private school, we do partial enrollment. Some kids are half day in public school, part day in private school. So, but they're in school and we know they're enrolled. The law knows they're enrolled in school. And then when we come to excusing kids, so this would be an absence unless it was part of a student's IEP program.
Right. Oh my God.
If the school's not providing it, it's really not part of the IEP. So it's really, you know, when we talk about your Boston case, there are so many individual variables that have to be considered. And then you have to apply the law to it, not just the state law of attendance and those types of requirements, but now you've got the federal special education law on top of that. So I know I'm taking it in a circle. So where are we?
No, it's
such a
this is where it goes all the time.
It goes, you know, in a circle in special education. And the resources that schools have, as we talked earlier, might be limited. And, you know, and even in – you think about rural areas where some of those resources – just aren't available, or a physical therapist or a behavior therapist is traveling 2 hours to go to a school, and then their next service is 2 hours away at another school, traveling in the rural areas. So it's never an easy fix, and especially with the educator shortage, especially we know that one of the major issues happening across the nation in all of our schools is behavior. We had one session on dealing with violent and aggressive students. We know there has been a rise in that. It was one of the highest attended sessions that we had. So that tells us it's what our educators are dealing with. And many times that could be some of our more involved students with disabilities. And what that tells us is our students are struggling too, not just our educators, but our students. Takes us back to that open communication that we need to be having with families. We really have to look at that problem-solving model, that problem-solving approach to sitting down, bringing in some other ideas, thinking outside the box, because our box has got to either get really, really big or we got to step outside of it to work with.
I was just picturing in my mind the box is overflowing. I mean, it's so hard out there. Okay. You know, you guys are in the trenches every day. All right. And somehow an administrator or special ed, you know, where that's who your group is. I mean, they're trying to juggle all of this. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's like trying to stop the Titanic from sinking with a paper cup. I mean, that's the kind of picture I get, you know, and it's just, and hopefully they will. I don't mean to say special ed is the Titanic, probably a bad analogy there. You know what I mean. But it's just that it's got to keep getting – we got to make it easier on people, and we got to figure out a way to do it. I mean, it's easy to pass a law that says you got to do this, and then, by the way, we're not going to fund it. You have to do it. Okay, go figure it out on your own. That's not fair either. All right?
Right.
And it's just rough out there is all I can tell you. All right. And I think the key, and that what you said at the beginning, you know, the whole, it boils down to effective communication from minute one. Okay. And trying to explain to the parents exactly, if you take your kid out for behavioral therapy, okay, legally they have to still be in school for X amount of hours. Okay. We have to juggle those two things. But, it's special ed parents, and bless their hearts, they care about their kids, of course. Okay. They want to do the best for their kids. All right. It is just really, really rough out there. You know, do you think that the the schools of education, as we get more and more in this, are they up to date, okay, on helping teachers understand, just the regular teacher, understanding autism and all the challenges that you folks have every day? How's that work? Would that help? I don't know. I don't know why I asked that question, but it just seems to me something that somebody ought to talk about.
It is one thing that would help. We need to educate our entire faculty of educators around students with disabilities and make them aware of those signs of maybe mental health issues that kids are having, because there's so many underlying. But I will tell you, we have a great series of workshops coming up that we're offering free to our members.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
It's an educator well-being series featuring Ricky Robertson, and it's on our website, the information. So it's a four-part series. The first one is when stress becomes contagious. The second one is putting your oxygen mask on first, and the psychological safety among teens. And collective care is essential. And Ricky is just an expert. We've had with us before, but this is some free training we're doing for our members to say, take care of yourself. If you're taking care of yourself, you'll be able to take care of your kids in your classroom, kids in your school. And so that's a real important first step. The other thing we're doing is actually tomorrow we have a discipline boot camp all day long, working with educators how to deal with discipline in the school and follow the requirements of IDEA. We'll be answering lots of questions throughout the day as well from the participants that are on that workshop. And then we also, quarterly we do the Weatherly Review, where we're talking about here's how to compliant, and here's the most recent information coming from our courts that they're requiring us to do. So we're working really hard to provide those resources for educators to stay on top of things and to follow the compliance requirements, as well as take care of yourself, openly communicate with parents. So we're working hard to provide those resources for teachers and administrators across the country.
A lot of balls to juggle out there. I have to tell you, Phil, it's just rough. It's just tough out there right now. And you guys are doing such a good job trying to help people. I got to tell you, thanks for being with us today, Ms. Wolfram. Thank you, my dear. You're always wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Look forward to next time.
Yeah, there will be a next time, I promise. Okay, and I won't be wearing my glasses then either. Okay,
I know.
Done.
I am
it's
so
done.
I'm going to send you a Zoom invite so I can see you.
Great. Better looking than ever. What can I tell you? I looked in the mirror first time. I look great. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Phyllis. You're wonderful. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Sir. All right.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
Oh,
bye.
My pleasure. Bye. Phyllis Wolfram, everybody. And Phyllis is the Executive Director of the Council of Administrators of Special Education. They got their hands full, okay, as do all the special ed teachers, okay, and everybody else involved with this, principals, et cetera, so please check it all out, share it with friends. We're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.